Ayatollah Khamenei says the U.S.'s assassination of General Soleimani was a miscalculation regarding Iran that only further strengthened the commander's campaign. Iraq's new parliament holds its first session amid heated debates and tension among the competing political parties. And the U.S. says it does not expect breakthroughs in its upcoming security talks with Russia, hours after Moscow ruled out any concessions to Washington. Thanks so much for being with us. First story takes us right here to Iran this hour, where the leader of the Islamic Revolution says the United States' assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani has only further strengthened the very campaign that the anti-terror commander set in motion. The leader said Washington's miscalculations have resulted in the U.S. government making wrong decisions, which in turn have led to its failure. Elsewhere in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the United States' profound animosity towards the Islamic Republic emanates from the religious nature of Iran's establishment. According to the leader, tyrants have always been opposed to movements and establishments with the religious foundation. The leader delivered the speech on the anniversary of the 1978 uprising in Iran against the dictatorial rule of the then Pahlavi monarch. Oh, he's spoken to political analyst Mustafa Khoshchash. Let's take a listen at what he has to say about the U.S. power waning in the region since General Soleimani's assassination.
After assassination of Haj Qasem Soleimani, the lieutenant general and anti-terror commander, we have been witnessing a different situation. The number of attacks by the resistant forces on the U.S. troops in the region have, you know, increased. And also, the U.S. has started a very confusing withdrawal from this region. The U.S. demise has sped up. We all saw how they exited and escaped, actually, Afghanistan. And the time has arrived for their expulsion from Iraq. The U.S. troops have come under more and more attacks in Iraq, and they have also withdrawn from some bases in Qatar. They withdrew the top echelon of the CENTCOM from Doha, and it's very clear that the U.S. is growingly becoming weaker and weaker each day. And this has been somehow the impact of his of the assassination of Qasem Soleimani.
Diplomatic efforts are going on in the Austrian capital to revive the 2015 Iran deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. This is the eighth round of talks between Iran and the remaining signatories to the deal. Well, the U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the accord in 2018 and is taking part indirectly. We've spoken to our correspondent in Vienna, Homolinsky, for the latest updates on the negotiations. Let's take a listen.
The eighth round of the talks aimed at restoring the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action is currently underway here in Vienna. The latest updates that we have is that Mr. Bagheri Kani, the head of Iran's delegation, is again having a meeting with the EU coordinator Enrique Mora and the representatives of the three European signatories of the JCPOA, Britain, France and Germany. Today there were some media reports claiming that they have some information from behind closed doors, the negotiations that are underway, and those reports are saying that there may be an interim two-year agreement taking place between Iran and the remaining signatories, but that has been rejected and dismissed by sources close to the Iranian negotiating team. One source close to the negotiator said that media reports claiming that an interim deal is going to be announced, it's a two-year deal, or that some agreements have been made, for instance, on the future of Iran's advanced centrifuges, what will happen to the stockpile of Iran's enriched uranium. Any information claiming that decisions have been made on these issues are false and they're fabricated. And we even saw that Western media were also making similar remarks, saying that Iranian and Western sources are both in agreement that these reports are, quote, wildly inaccurate. However, sources close to the Iranian team have confirmed that the talks are taking place in a positive atmosphere. As you said there, Mr. Bagheri Kani himself saying that they are moving forward and that even differences when it comes to the issue of sanctions are narrowing. But this does not by any way mean that the differences have been resolved. They're still there. They still need to be worked on.
Now to Iraq, where the newly elected parliament resumes its first session after being briefly adjourned amid tensions over which bloc holds the majority. Lawmakers are now electing a speaker and two deputies. The process was briefly disrupted amid heated debates and shouting among lawmakers. The temporary leader of the assembly, Mahmoud al-Mashahadani, was attacked by an MP and transported to a hospital. Parliament has 30 days to elect a president to succeed incumbent Barham Saleh. The new president will then name a prime minister tasked with forming a government within a month. Iraq held its parliamentary elections on October the 10th. The Sadrist movement, led by Shia cleric Mohtar al-Saad, won most seats. Iraq is trying to recover from years of violence and terrorism following the U.S.-led invasion in 2003. And there we have breaking news there out of Iraq that Iraqi lawmakers have picked Mohammed al-Habasi as speaker. Again, breaking news saying that Iraqi lawmakers have picked Mohammed al-Habasi as speaker. We're going to cross over now, though, to Baghdad to get the latest, talking to Navid Behrouz. Thanks so much, Navid. Well, tell us what's going on. Fill us in the latest on the ground. It's been a pretty active meeting overall session today.
Yes, at last, in a tense session, parliament session, which was illegal to, according to some observers, and at last Mohammed al-Habasi has been elected as parliament speaker for the fifth round of the parliament. 200. They had 212 votes for Mashhadani and for al-Habasi, and he was elected parliament speaker. I said that the session was tense at, because before this session was held, when Mahmoud al-Mashhadani was the interim parliament speaker. He was the chief of the session because he was older than anyone else. Then the framework, he received a letter from the biggest fraction of the parliament, and then it turned violent, and then the session turned violent. Mashhadani was attacked, and he was taken to hospital, and the session was adjourned. And because of this, the framework of coordination, which was one of the fractions, it got out of the session. The Patriotic Union of Kurdistan and many of the lawmakers left the parliament meeting because they thought it was illegal. But at the end of the day, the session continued. But with the leadership of Khaled al-Haradi, and al-Habasi was elected as the new parliament speaker. This election, from the point of legally, actually some fractions, including the framework of coordination, say that this election is illegal and they do not agree with it. On the other hand, the election of Mohammed al-Habasi is contrary to what had happened after the 2003, because and this could be considered a new development. So if this if this continues for the presidential election, for the election of president and prime minister, then things could change in Iraq, and important fraction, political fractions in Iraq, including Shia groups, including Mustaqillin and the independent groups, would be out of the political flow, and the Iraqi government could become weaker. But the fraction of majority of the parliament, which includes 88 parliaments, they have sent a letter and they have signed a letter. If this letter can be implemented, then a huge Shia fraction could form, and then a strong government could be formed. And actually, this is the second scenario, and now with the election of Halbousi, we expect that the parliament session finish, and then in the coming sessions, nominations for president will start, and then after that, we will have nominates for prime minister. And of course, that would be according to constitution. There's 15 days. We have 15 days to elect president, and then 15 other days for prime minister. So it's 1 month that Iraq needs to elect president, and after that, prime minister.
Thank you so much for that update from Baghdad, Nadi Behrouz. Moving on to other news now. In the hours ahead, senior diplomats from the United States and Russia will sit down for talks on issues straining their bilateral relations. But even before the meeting, both sides are voicing pessimism. Russia's envoy, Sergei Ryabkov, says he's disappointed by the signals that the U.S. and the European Union are sending before the talks in Geneva. He says the U.S. is insistent on getting unilateral concessions from Russia, but that Moscow will not agree to any such concessions. And the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, says many of Moscow's proposals are simply non-starters. The Kremlin is seeking a new security arrangement with the White House. The dispute over Ukraine will top the agenda. Also, arms control, human rights, and conflicts around the globe will likely be brought up. The talks will be held on Sunday and Monday. A Russia-NATO meeting is scheduled for Wednesday. We've spoken to political commentator Markos Papadopoulos about the upcoming talks between Russia and the U.S. He says he welcomes the negotiations but believes that Washington's promises would mean nothing in the long term. Let's take a listen.
The forthcoming meeting between the Americans and the Russians concerning the Ukraine crisis. And I also welcome the reports we have been receiving in the last few days that the Americans may offer the Russians the possibility of Washington scaling down NATO's presence in Eastern Europe, which indicates that Russia has, as many of us have said for many years now, a legitimate grievance over NATO's presence in Eastern Europe, which is a gross violation of the NATO-Russia founding treaty of 1997. An American pledge in writing would be welcomed, but in the long term, it would not mean anything. After all, America has violated the NATO-Russia founding treaty of 1997 by positioning NATO forces in Eastern Europe. Secondly, when NATO bombed the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia in 1999, the Americans, who are the de facto leader of NATO, violated Article 1 of NATO's founding treaty, which clearly stipulates that NATO will never use force to resolve a dispute. Mm-hmm. So an American pledge in writing is not worth the paper it's written on.
Kazakhstan's health ministry says 164 people have been killed in the unrest that hit the country last week following protests over a fuel price hike. The ministry says the majority of the victims lost their lives in the main city of Almaty. It saw some of the fiercest clashes between protesters and security forces. The Kazakh presidency says almost 6,000 people, including foreign nationals, have been arrested in connection with the unrest. The government says things have now stabilized, but counterterror operations will continue. Kazakhstan says Russia-led peacekeepers are now protecting several of its strategic facilities. Some small cities are still witnessing protests. They have continued, even the government resigned, and the president restored fuel price caps. Well, thousands of anti-military protesters in Sudan take to the streets of the capital, Khartoum, and in its twin city to demand full civilian rule. Security forces fired tear gas in Khartoum. They set up roadblocks to prevent protesters from approaching the presidential palace and army headquarters. Anti-military rallies have continued unabated since the army staged a coup on October the 25th. The military also ousted civilian Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. It reinstated him a month later, but the anti-coup protests continued. Hamdok stepped down last week amid a crackdown that has so far left at least 60 people dead. Sudan has been governed by a coalition made up of civilians and military leaders since longtime ruler Omar al-Bashir was toppled in 2019. And now to Nigeria, which says bandits have killed at least 200 people in multiple raids in the northwest over the last week. But the attacks hit Zamfara State. The government has called them horrific and tragic, labeling the bandits as terrorists. It says 10,000 people were also displaced when their homes were razed. Scores of others are still missing. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has condemned the attacks as an act of desperation by mass murderers and pledged to destroy the outlaws. The armed forces, meanwhile, say they've killed over 500 armed bandits and other criminal elements in the region since May of last year. Hundreds of others have been arrested. And with that, it brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thanks so much for staying with us.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
journalism. Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, January 9th, 2022. I'm Atef Erfani hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. Or if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So don't miss this program and keep us company until the end. Welcome back and greetings to you all again. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. As you may know, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. You know why? Because these reception reports actually enable us in IRIB English Radio to provide a better service to our great listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a report, a reception report, will be receiving an EQSL card from us. So, here, I sent my warm appreciations and my deepest gratitudes to those of our listeners around the world who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Henry Omate from the Philippines, Bala Murali from Canada, and Alan Willey from Canada. All of them are old and regular listeners. And here, I sent my appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails, including Toshio Shibata from Japan, S. Hasna from India, Vasily Kuznetsov from Russia, Bruce Lee from Australia, and the last but not least in this program, Bill McDavid from the U.S. So many thanks for sending us these emails from around the world. Please stay with us. I will be back, and I will read all these great emails. Please stay tuned. Welcome back. Toshio Shibata from Japan, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. Let's see what he says. Hello. Thank you very much for your email. What has changed in 2021 in my life is that I restarted listening to radio. I started listening to international shortwave broadcast at the age of 15. I continued the hobby until I was 30 years old. Unfortunately, I did not know that IRIB had a broadcast in Japanese. I really regret it. By the way, I sent a reception report on IRIB medium wave broadcast on 783 kilohertz and 936 kilohertz. It is added at the end of this email, and I attached two MP3 audio clips. Could you please consider sending me AQSL? Salam and warm greetings to you, Toshio Shibata from Japan. And I thank you for sending us this email. We are so happy that you sent us this email. And for your information, as you requested, of course, IRIB has a Japanese radio. And for getting information about this radio, IRIB Japanese Radio, you can refer to their website at www.podcast.com parstoday.com/JA. There you can get the information about this radio. And we are so happy that you have followed up this radio through IRIB English Radio. So you have been listening to shortwave radio broadcast since you were 15 years old, and that's a long time. Yes, that's such a long time, and that's great. IRIB World Service actually has broadcast in different languages, including Japanese and English that you're listening to. So many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. And as I said, you can follow up the information about Japanese IRIB Japanese Radio through the website. Again, I repeat it, parstoday.com/JA. And anyway, Toshi Shibata from Japan, many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. And from India, we have an email from S. Hasna, one of our regular listeners. S. Hasna from India says, "Dear sir or madam, I am a listener of worldwide radios, shortwave radios for the last 2 years. I used to keep the QSL cards as precious gemstones. Please send me the stickers and booklets and radios for my New Year's gift. I shall be very grateful if you send thanks and regard. Salam and warm greetings to you, S. Hasna from India." I do send my appreciations to you for sending us this email. So, you have a precious collection of radio souvenirs and promotional items, and that's wonderful. Keep up the good work. But for your information, S. Hasna from India, our radio, IRIB English Radio, and many other radio stations around the world used to send their listeners around the world the promotional items and souvenirs, especially at the New Year. Yes, we sent our dear listeners stickers, booklets, magazines, and postcards with Iranian monuments. In the time of the pandemic, of course, we, like many other radio stations, changed the course. And we just sent our dear listeners an EQSL card, an electronic QSL card. Maybe after the time of pandemic, we sent you the promotional items you requested. For the time being, keep up the good work. S. Hasna from India, yes, continue sending us these emails and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. Many thanks for sending us this email, S. Hasna from India. Write to us soon. So, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Russia, from Vasily Kuznetsov. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. As I said, Vasily Kuznetsov from Russia has sent us an email. This email says, "Dear friends, I was glad to listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on shortwaves. For my opinion, the news program of English service is very good. Also, I should say that your website in both English and Russian languages are very useful. Kind regards. Salam and warm greetings to you, Vasily Kuznetsov from Russia, one of our regular listeners. Thank you very much for writing to IRIB English Radio, your radio. And we are so happy that you let us know your opinion about our broadcast, because you said the news program of English service is very good. We are so happy for that. It seems that you both listen to English and Russian languages of IRIB World Service, and that's great. Many thanks for writing this email to us. Vasily Kuznetsov from Russia, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. Write to us soon and let us know your opinions about our broadcast, Vasily. And from Australia, from the Southern Hemisphere, which are actually they're spending their time in the summer, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee from Australia says, "Dear sir or madam, I hope everything has been going well recently. I am a radio enthusiast and live in Australia. I wish to report reception of your broadcasting again. If the details are correct, please verify with a QSL card. If possible, a paper card is more appreciated. Kind regards." Salam and warmest greetings to you, Bruce Lee, from Australia. And I do send my gratitude to you for sending us this email from Australia. You know, Bruce Lee, since sending paper QSL cards and any other material is not possible in the time of the pandemic, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card, an EQSL card, so please accept it from IRIB English Radio, your radio. Bruce Lee from Australia, write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. After a short break, I will be back with other emails from around the world. Please stay with us. Welcome back from the U.S. We have an email from Bill McDavid, one of our old and regular listeners. Bill says, "Hello, dear friends at IRIB English Radio. My best wishes to you for the new year. I listen to you often presenting the English segment for IRIB Radio. Is it possible for you to send me an EQSL for a reception report? I look forward to hearing from you, and best wishes for the new year to all the listeners around the world." Salam and warm greetings to you, Bill McDavid from the U.S., and thank you very much for sending us this email. As you may know, we still receive congratulatory messages from around the world, including what we have from Bill McDavid from the U.S., Bill, we wish you and all our listeners around the world all the best in 2022. Peace, joy, health, and good tidings to all of you, dear listeners around the world, on the new year 2022. Bill McDavid from the U.S., my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you, and best wishes for you for the new year. Stay with us, please. Wishing all of you the best in life and especially health. We wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Please keep in touch with us and have a good time.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with our Abbey English Radio.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The Netherlands has ended funding to the Union of Agricultural Work Committees, one of six Palestinian organizations recently declared as terrorist groups by the fake regime of Israel. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Maureen Claire Murphy, journalist. This article is titled Dutch Double Standards. Punish Palestinians, embrace Zionist regime. Stay tuned for more. The Netherlands has ended funding to the Union of Agricultural Work Committees, one of six Palestinian organizations recently declared as terrorist groups by the fake regime of Israel. The implications of the Dutch move will reverberate throughout Palestinian civil society, which is under unprecedented attack by the Zionist regime. The Zionist regime accuses the prominent human rights and social services organizations of serving as front groups for the Popular Front of the Liberation of Palestine, a leftist political party banned by the Zionist regime, the U.S. and EU. The targeted groups reject the Zionist regime's claims and have demanded that Tel Aviv provide the evidence that it claims justifies by the sweeping measure. Recently, the Zionist regime responded by saying that it would allow the groups to review only the unclassified material on which it is basing the designations. In its response, the Zionist regime's military attorney stated that the core of the declarations is based on classified, cross-checked, and reliable intelligence confirmation that cannot be disclosed, as it may harm security. The Zionist regime's response shows that the targeted groups are afforded no due process rights. Adala, a group providing legal representation to the banned organization, said recently. It also suggests that the Zionist regime authorities have no evidence linking them with illegal acts, and that this move amounts to the political persecution of human rights defenders. The terror designations leave the organization's staff vulnerable to arrest and their offices and property subject to closure and confiscation. The blacklisted group UAWC stated that given this context, the Dutch government was not abandoning it, but Palestinian civil society at large. The Dutch Foreign Ministry announced the decision recently after suspending aid to the group 18 months ago and following a year-long probe into possible links between the UAWC and the FPLP. That review examining the group's activities since 2007, when the Netherlands began funding the UAWC, yielded no evidence of financial flows between it and the PFLP. Nor has any proof been found of organizational unity between the UAWC and the PFLP, or PFLP providing direction to the UAWC, the Dutch Foreign Ministry states in an 8-page briefing to that country's parliament. While rejecting the Zionist regime's claim that the UAWC is an arm of the PFLP, the Dutch review found ties between individual staff and board members with the leftist group. The Dutch government is ending its funding on the basis of UAWC staff and board members' political affiliation in their personal capacities. The Netherlands is effectively punishing an entire organization and all its beneficiaries over alleged political sympathies of some of its staff and board members. The Foreign Ministry's briefing to the Dutch Parliament states that organizations will be asked how they deal with employees or board members who may be involved with groups that are on the EU and UN sanctions list. Palestinian resistance to the Zionist regime occupation, apartheid, and settler colonization has long been branded as unacceptable and criminalized. The U.S. designated the PFLP and other factions as terrorist groups as punishment for the rejection of the Oslo Accords signed by the fake regime of Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization in 1990s. UAWC said that the findings of the Dutch review reflect the group's status and existence as an independent organization which has no political or religious affiliation with any party or political organization. The group added that it cannot and would not interfere with the personal political beliefs and affiliations of its employees and board members. UAWC said it was shocked over the move based on alleged individual links resembling the toxic allegations of Israeli groups like NGO Monitor. Groups closely aligned with the Zionist regime, such as NGO Monitor, have for years published scurrilous accusations against Palestinian groups attempting to link them to proscribed political parties. The smear campaigns have resulted in onerous conditions on funding to Palestinian groups, curtailing their ability to carry out their work. So far, no government has come out in support of the Zionist regime's banning of the six Palestinian organizations it declared terror groups in October. But the U.S. and the EU have yet to explicitly condemn the move and demand that the Zionist regime revoke the designations. And as the Dutch abandonment of the UAWC shows, the Israeli declaration may have the intended effect of isolating the groups and drawing up their international funding. Three of the targeted groups, including Al-Haq, Al-Damir, and Defense for Children International Palestine, have submitted evidence to the International Criminal Court's war crimes investigation in the West Bank and Gaza Strip by the Zionist regime. That international tribunal is based in The Hague, the seat of the Dutch government. The UAWC was established in 1986 to support Palestinian farmers in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip, facing Israeli land and water theft. The Zionist regime's illegal settlement activity is likely to be a primary focus of the International Criminal Court's investigation should it move forward. The Dutch government has been a leading donor to the UAWC since 2013, according to the group. The campaign to cut off Dutch funding to the group began in May 2019 when UK lawyers for the Israeli regime sent a letter to the Netherlands representative office in Ramallah with information about UAWC's supposed links to the PFLP. In June 2020, UK lawyers for the Zionist regime repeated those claims in a letter to Sigrid Kaag, Dutch development minister at the time, citing NGO Monitor as its principal source of information. UAWC said it was particularly saddened that the process leading to its disavowal was initiated by Kaag soon after her visit to the West Bank in early 2020, where she witnessed the relevance of the work. Kaag's oversight of funding to UAWC was used as a political cudgel by right-wing politicians in the Netherlands during that country's elections last year, as reported by more than 972 magazines. The UAWC said recently that the Zionist regime will seize the Dutch decision to further escalate its all-out attack on Palestinian civil society. All of this is diverting international attention from the Zionist regime's theft and its brutal suppression of the Palestinian people living under military occupation. The Dutch Foreign Ministry's briefing to Parliament mentions that the UAWC ended the employment of two staff members who were arrested by the Zionist regime in 2019 over their alleged involvement in a roadside explosion near a West Bank settlement that killed an Israeli girl and injured her brother and father. One of the arrested men, Samir Arbit, was hospitalized with life-threatening injuries after being tortured during his interrogation by Shin Bet, the Zionist regime's domestic intelligence agency. The Zionist regime prison authorities continued to interrogate Arbit while he was in intensive care, and a prison guard reportedly fired tear gas into his hospital room. Palestinian human rights organizations said that both Arbit and the other former employee, Abd al-Razak Faraj, suffered physical and psychological torture during interrogation. The Zionist regime's attorney general closed an investigation into Arbit's brutal interrogation early last year. Independent UN human rights expert condemned the Zionist regime's failure to prosecute, punish, and redress the torture and ill-treatment perpetrated against Arbit. The expert said, "We are alarmed that the use of so-called enhanced interrogation techniques or exceptional measures during questioning reportedly led to a forced confession, which the universal prohibition of torture and ill-treatment aims to prevent." Concerning the broader attack on UAWC, which predates the arrest of two of its former employees, Palestinian groups stated in 2020 that UAWC is preventing the Palestinian presence on land that the Zionist regime wants to annex. That is why UAWC has been under attack for years. The Palestinian group said the Netherlands should investigate Dutch campaigns maintaining commercial relations with and profiting from illegal Israeli settlements. Instead, a Palestinian group supporting farmers and vulnerable communities across Palestine finds itself under review. In its letter to Parliament, the Dutch Foreign Ministry reiterated that the Netherlands funds Palestinian non-governmental organizations as part of the country's support for a two-state solution. The Zionist regime's current regime cabinet openly refuses to negotiate with Palestinians towards a two-state solution supported, at least in rhetoric, by the U.S., EU, and United Nations.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common. Humanity is in need of Jesus Christ's teachings against oppression. Jesus Christ was equipped with the power of performing miracles and carried a divine message for humanity which saved them from the darkness of polytheism, atheism, ignorance, and oppression and guided them towards justice, knowledge, and worshipping God. And this is the lesson which all Christians and Muslims who believe in the prophethood of Jesus Christ should learn. Today humanity is in need of those teachings more than ever before. The Virgin Mary was a young woman who stood firm against the accusations and suspicions of the people in her town and region, and she returned to her people holding her son in her arms. A girl came to a temple and stayed there until her youth. What factors and motivations caused her to resist all those temptations with such superhuman power? If her power was not superhuman, the issue would not be so greatly emphasized in the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran says she guarded her chastity, which means that she remained pure.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Islam taught us to behave in a fair way towards the followers of other religions. January 26, 2015. We have learned from Islam that we should behave in a fair way towards the followers of other religions. This is Islam's command to us. Today, what is witnessed in the world is that powers of those governments which claim to support justice do not at all behave in a fair way, except in the inner circle of their narrow, limited, and oppressive policies. Today you can see that in Europe and America they use massive propaganda against Muslims. The issue is not why Muslims do not have any freedom in many of these countries. Rather, the issue is why they do not have any security. The movie American Sniper, which has produced some reactions and which has been made by Hollywood, encourages a Christian or non-Muslim to harass Muslims as much as he can. In fact, according to what others have said, we have not seen this movie, it encourages such courses of action. This is not at all accepted by Islam. Islam believes in justice. On the issue of that attack on the city of Al-Anbar, the commander of the faithful, peace and greetings be upon him, said, "I have come to know that every one of them entered upon Muslim women and non-Muslim women." In this sermon, he says that some people have entered the houses of Muslims and Mu'ahida women. Mu'ahid means Jewish and Christian individuals who have formed an alliance with Muslims and who live under the protection of Islam. To take away their ornaments and harass them, then Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "If any Muslim dies of grief after hearing all of this, he is not to be blamed." If a Muslim dies of grief at the harassment of non-Muslim women by the armies of the enemies and looters, they entered their houses and took away their ornaments, he is not to be blamed. This is the viewpoint of Islam.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.